Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I told you it was going to be a good show, and I didn't lie to you, did I? That Dr. Gwen Adams, she's all right. I hope everybody will get that book. You can just go over to AugustineInstitute.org and you can find it. And then I told you this hour, we've got one of the world's leading Catholic bioethicists with us. Out of the course is Father Tad Boholcik, who's also a doctor, but I think the father trumps that. I don't know. We'll ask him if that trumps that. He's the director of education for the National Catholic Bioethics Center. When we here at Catholic Answers need answers in bioethics or encounter someone who has a difficult bioethical question, we always send them to the National Catholic Bioethics Center, as people do from around the world. Father Tad Boholcik, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Si. Thanks for having me on.
So if you have a PhD and you're a priest, you just go by Father, right?
I do. Yes, it's good to keep it simple.
Okay.
Father always works well.
Okay, very, very good. It seems like the issues come day by day. I was just listening yesterday to a report on the radio about here in San Diego. At a pediatric hospital, they have these children. It's the Rady's Children's Hospital here, who, I guess at pediatric hospitals, there's always a certain percentage of children. They can't diagnose what's wrong with them. And now they're doing genetic testing, and they take the genes of the kid, and in about 48 hours or less, they get the whole readout back. And often that will point them in the direction of what's wrong with the kid. It's just an amazing kind of world that we're living in. That seems like a great good. Is it an unmixed good, all this genetic stuff that's happening, or is it a mixed good?
Well, I would say for a use like that, it's a real good, and it is an amazing thing. When I was a graduate student, many, many decades ago, this idea of being able to sequence all the genes of a person was something hugely expensive as a proposal. And, now it's the kind of thing that is getting so cheap that individuals are getting able to pay for it to get the information themselves. There are companies that can offer, complete genome sequencing. So the case you're mentioning of where they do this in kind of a way to try to figure out what's going on, a remarkable thing, because otherwise some of these conditions, they really, as you're implying, they have no idea how to move forward and diagnose what may be going on. But if you can scan through those millions of base pairs that are in our DNA and find some clues that will point you in the right direction, that's going to be a great good. Now, there are other things here that if you start testing for particular conditions of children in the womb before they're born, and then you start setting the bar and saying you have to have certain qualities, you can't have this, that, or the other problems, otherwise we're going to abort you, that's going to represent a very clear and very terrible kind of a use of this technology in a form of discrimination against human beings. And, it doesn't have to be that outright and explicit. It can also be the kind of thing that, let's say, some of the sequencing starts to be done more and more widely, and maybe an insurance company gets a hold of the information and starts to say that we're not going to cover certain pre-existing conditions, and we know you have the pre-existing condition because we got a hold of your genome, etc. That's going to be a concern as well, that there could be another form of financial discrimination like that.
Yeah, it's just one more kind of it's a bit of data that I guess with any data you could. There's going to be positive uses for it, but there's going to be uses that are negative as well. And you can, I guess another part of that too is that not all the world is the United States of America. You can imagine governments like for example, the Chinese Communist government using these kinds of genetic markers for nefarious purpose as well.
I think that's correct. And that is one of the concerns here, that how is the data going to be handled? Will an individual have the final say and control over his or her own genetic data? But, already some of these companies that you can send him a sample of your saliva, and he will do some sequencing for you. They're sometimes written into the fine print that this will become available for comparison purposes. This will allow you to find other relatives who you may be related to, who you may not have known about. And, you know, there are many other kind of twists and turns to this technology. And I think acknowledging what you're pointing out, that if we don't maintain some control over this, that it will have the possibility of falling into the wrong hands and being used against us in certain cases.
888-318-7884 is our number. Father Tad Boholcik is our guest. Father Tad is the director of education at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. He is himself a scientist and ethicist, and happy to take your calls, whether it is on issues involving life in its earliest stages or latest stages. I mention those because those are generally particularly vulnerable stages, and that means that they are sometimes are and as we see now today, are often under attack, but also if you have general questions about healthcare, about the appropriate use of things like genetic testing in your own life, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Now they got the thing where you kind of like spit in a test tube or something, and then in a little while they send you back information on your genetic heritage, people love this, and it's fun and exciting and everything, but are there any ethical concerns that people should be worried about there as well?
Well, there have been some stories in the news that you may have heard about where somebody does this and they check out who are some of the people who they might be related to, and somebody pops up. I heard about a case where a woman did this. And she heard the name, she found out the name of somebody who it appeared she was related to, and she sort of recognized the name, and then she asked her mom, and her mom said, oh, that was our fertility doctor way back when.
Oy.
And then turned out to be the case that fertility doctor had used his own sperm without, you know, giving them any indication of that during one of the in vitro fertilization procedures, and she was, you know, the result of that. And so this was kind of shocking news to her to find out that was the true status of things. So there are surprises that I think come up when you get this kind of very, very extensive data about your own genetics.
And are there some things that, I mean, I feel both my grandmothers are passed, but let's say your DNA showed that your grandmother had been unfaithful, you know, that you're not related exactly the way you thought you were. And those things happen. And then it seems to me there's a certain right that even the dead have of protection and privacy that it seems like we're opening. Am I being too sensitive about that, or is that a real concern?
Well, I think that could be a concern. And, I mean, yeah, it can be the case that finding out certain types of information is really harmful and damaging and upsetting to people. And there may have been efforts made previously to secure the knowledge and keep it, as it were, under lock and key. And then it comes out later in a harmful and damaging way. So I think that there are duties here to be prudent, to be attentive that people are kind of protected appropriately, and but you know, that's going to be hard to sort of work into any kind of legal framework. I think that's going to be something that rather requires that we exercise the virtue of prudence, and that we're sensitive to the vulnerable spots in our lives, if you will. And proceed therefore with caution in the face of what may be rather surprising and unanticipated findings from such testing.
Father Tad Boholcik is our guest. Calls already lining up. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you have a bioethics question today, you get to talk with one of the world's leading experts in that field. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with your calls for Father Tad Boholcik right after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live. Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit MysticMonkCoffee.com. That's MysticMonkCoffee.com.
Check out EWTN's official YouTube channel. Just follow the link on our homepage at EWTN.com or go to YouTube.com/EWTN.
Watch EWTN's live shows or today's homily from the Daily Mass.
Click the upload button to see our most recent clips.
You can also find all of EWTN YouTube content by clicking the playlist button.
It's all on the official EWTN YouTube channel at YouTube.com/EWTN.
Visit today.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. The fall store-wide sale is still going on at shop.catholic.com because fall is still going on. Hundreds of great Catholic resources on sale. Just go to shop.catholic.com and check out all the great savings. Plus, you get $5 flat rate shipping on anything and everything that you purchase there in the continental United States. $5 flat rate shipping within the continental U.S. at shop.catholic.com while the fall sale continues. Again, 888-318-7884, our number, Father Tad Poholchik, our guest, and our topic, bioethics. If you've got a question in the realm of bioethics, you are welcome to call. Up first today is Christina in Dallas, Texas, listening on KATH 910 AM. Christina, your question for Father Tad.
Yes, I'm calling because I'm concerned about dementia in old age. I'm in my late 50s. My mother and my mother-in-law both have dementia, and it's really difficult watching them go through this. They're moving losses, and it's just they kind of go in and out of kind of coherence. And so I did have a saliva test done on my mom several years ago and found out she carries one copy of the APOE4 gene. That seems to be an indicator for Alzheimer's. And then I did my test of my own and discovered I had the exact same pattern. So I'm really concerned about purchasing long-term healthcare insurance and wondering about whether companies in the future will do their own genetic testing and exclude people who have, you know, don't have any genetic dispositions for diseases.
Yeah, well, Christina, I think that's a legitimate concern. We were hinting at that in the beginning of the show, that this is something that we need to keep on our radar and make sure that this information is not used in a way to exclude people from coverage, and that all of us can take advantage of the notion of health insurance, which really is set up recognizing always that there are going to be certain people who will have, you know, greater propensity to get certain diseases or anomalies. And when you have a large pool of people who are part of an insurance arrangement, the idea is that, you know, coverage is possible for all of us, regardless of what our particular condition is. And I mean, I think your question also brings up the whole issue of, for somebody who does testing and finds a situation like you're describing, where maybe there's an indicator that there's a greater chance that they might develop a particular disease, what can you do ahead of time? And I think, you know, making preparations, particularly for the kinds of diseases you're mentioning, dementias or Alzheimer's, that it's a good thing to plan ahead. And this will include really what all of us should be doing, which is to designate a healthcare proxy. That's somebody who can make decisions if we become incapacitated and we're not able to make our own decisions. And of course, with dementia, that is likely to happen. So it's good to have these discussions ahead of time, designate in writing who that person will be, and kind of, you know, set up a few things in that direction, people that you trust to do that particular function. And then, you know, there'll be other sorts of questions that may come further along if it does appear, in fact, that the disease is manifesting itself. Then one needs to, of course, take specific concrete steps in dealing with other matters, you know, pertaining to finances and all of that. But I think, you know, from the point of view of the bioethical issues, getting that healthcare proxy in place is one of the most important things that an individual can do, especially when you have some indication that there might be a condition that you have that will manifest later on.
Christina, I hope that was helpful. Thank you very, very much for the call and for the question. 888-318-7884 is our number here. As you're speaking, I was just thinking, I heard the other day someone telling me they were studying to be a genetic counselor. Is this a new thing, and is it a good thing, a bad thing? What do you know about genetic counseling?
Well, genetic counseling is a rapidly expanding career option that people have when they are studying. There are concerns around the way that this field is developing, because what happens is many times students will go through the formation to become a genetic counselor, and basically they will be kind of indoctrinated into a viewpoint that says, look, when parents are doing prenatal testing, you have to give them all the options, quote unquote. And that means, of course, including discussions of abortion, of terminations, et cetera. And this raises serious, serious concerns for any Catholic who is thinking about becoming a genetic counselor. They cannot be part of the glide path into those kinds of evils. So I think that's a challenge for a Catholic to move into that field. They need to have a good sense of Catholic background and bioethical formation as they go forward.
Okay, fair enough. Up next, Thomas in Texas, listening on St. Valentine's Radio. Thomas, your question for Father Tad Boholcek.
Okay, I would have before me a medical directive along with durable medical power of attorney, and it has many factors in it that I am wondering are in keeping with Catholic teaching. I'm wondering if I would send that to your office there, your bioethics. Would you go through that and then mark out what's not right and correct it, because I think there's holes in it? And also, in the process, I'll mail this to you. If you will accept it and then send it back, I'll put some money in it for postage. And if you will do that for me, I would greatly appreciate it. And I need your address.
And this is a end-of-life directive that you're talking about?
Right, right.
Okay, Father, what's the story on end of life directives, and what does the National Catholic Bioethics Center say and do about them?
Yes, well, this is a good question that Thomas is raising here. We do not actually receive people's living wills kind of in their entirety and then sit down and go through them part by part and do a review or anything like that. What we instead offer is we have our own living will form and our own healthcare proxy designation forms, and those are available. I think they're $2.50, and you can actually download them directly from our website as a downloadable PDF. And what we do is we then encourage people like Thomas to look over our form, make a comparison perhaps with a form that they may have gotten from their lawyer, and they can even bring our form into their lawyer and say, look, I'm a Catholic. I want some of the language that I see here in the National Catholic Bioethics Center's living will to be incorporated into mine. So we don't review, entire living wills, which can be multiple pages, but we do have also, would be of interest to Thomas, a free consultation service, which again is accessible through our website. There's a drop-down menu under consultations, and what you do is you type in a particular ethical question that you may have. So, there could be a situation where somebody would say, well, I want to find out more about what are the circumstances where it's good and reasonable to use a ventilator. Do you have any information about that? Because I'm filling out my living will. And, I was wondering if it's okay to write in my living will that I never, ever, absolutely ever want to be on a ventilator. And then we would get back to that person. We would say, no, you should never put language like that where you're tying the hands of your own physician ahead of time when you don't even know whether that ventilator might, in fact, help you out and be important to your recovery. So, we would answer the question for the person, the concrete question that they have of an ethical sort. And sometimes when people are filling out their own living wills, there may be a question or two that pops up. And I think, Thomas, you could make use of that if you see a particular area on your own living will that you're not sure that it's in line with Catholic teaching. And we would be happy to, answer that specific question.
Now, I have heard you talk about this before, and my recollection was, and you just said it to the woman before, about a proxy. So do you recommend that you have, as part of your living will, that someone is designated your healthcare proxy? Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. We don't actually encourage a living will, because living wills, as I was hinting in that reply earlier, can end up limiting options in ways that don't make sense. Sometimes people will write a living will kind of out of fear, and they'll say, oh, gee, I'm kind of afraid of machines, so don't hook me up to any machines. And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. Sometimes machines are a good thing for us, and we live in an age where we have the blessing of various machines. So you shouldn't write a living will to be overly restrictive in that kind of way. So that's why we say to people, you don't actually have to have a living will, but what you should have, what all of us should have, is a person that you have chosen and had a discussion with and said to them, are you willing to be my proxy, my healthcare power of attorney, so that if I can't make my decisions, will you step in? Will you have the conversations with my doctors and the nurses and figure out what I need and make those decisions on my behalf when I become unable to do it? And that's very important, because that's a good way to make decisions at the end of life, because then that person will be talking real time with the physicians and the healthcare team and making some informed decisions, not decisions that are driven by fear or emotion, but decisions that are based on real medical data of the moment for the sick person who may be in the hospital.
Thomas, I hope that that is all helpful to you, and perhaps there is someone who can take the role of a healthcare proxy for you. Appreciate the call. Our number here is 888-318-7884. There are three lines open right now, and Father Tad Vaholchik is our guest. Father Tad is the Director of Education for the National Catholic Bioethics Center, the premier, really, bioethics kind of clearinghouse for information and for kind of cutting-edge research and understanding on how to make or appropriate uses of how to make appropriate uses of the new biotechnologies that are coming along and new techniques. More with Father Tad as we come back. As I said, three lines open. Callers, we're going to get to you right when we come back, so hang on. We will get to you. It's Bioethics today with Father Tad Vaholchik on Catholic Answers Live, 888-31-TRUTH.
Catholic Answers Live.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and getting excited to head over to Omaha, go to the big conference at Spirit Catholic Radio there in Omaha. We'll do that Saturday. Friday, Tim and Trent will join me for a show on the current state of the church and world a little bit. We'll discuss the world a little bit as well, and that'll be Friday from Omaha, Nebraska. So if you haven't got your tickets yet and you'd like to come, I think there are a few left at spiritcatholicradio.com, spiritcatholicradio.com. We'd love to see you. I just found out, I didn't know, apparently it gets cold in Nebraska this time of the year. Maybe someone could have mentioned that before I agreed to go, but okay, we're still going, but I think we're going to be below. Yes, Thomas, it's going to be below freezing some nights. That's frightening to me. 888-318-7884, the number here. Father Tad Vaholchik, our guest. We're talking bioethics, and lots of folks are on the line, so I'm going to try to get to them. Up next, we go to Caleb in Columbus, Ohio, listening on the EWTN app. Caleb, your question for Father Tad Vaholchik.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. A couple quick questions on the end of life. The Catholic Church teaching on one organ harvesting after you passed away, natural causes and stuff, and two, donating your body to medical science.
Okay, let's do those. On donating organs after death, and on donating your body to science once you have died. What does the church say about
that? Good questions. So the church is open to people choosing to freely donate their organs after they have died, if they would like to. It's not something that we should be pressured to do. It should be a free choice, a choice made out of charity for another person. But there's no problem with doing it after we have died. And so that's an area that Pope John Paul II dealt with in one of his documents called Evangelium Vitae, and he reminded us that this really is an act of great generosity when somebody decides to do it. You know, there's concerns in certain jurisdictions, like in New York State at one point, they were looking at having a law of what they called presumed consent, and that meant that when you died, they could get your organs by default, even though you had not given permission, and that the church would not support. The church wants each of us to make the decision ourselves freely, and not to have a situation of presumed consent. So that's, in a nutshell, the issue surrounding donating our organs after we die. The question about donating our body to science would fall under the same heading, that this is allowable if we would like to do it. And it's important, though, to understand that if we do this, for example, there might be a university that would like to receive somebody's body after they have died. It's important to make arrangements ahead of time with that university. You know, so for example, your body might end up being used by medical students, and they would open up your body and they would look at different organs inside, and this would help them as medical students to learn the anatomy. But then after this has been done, after your body has been used, there should be some provision for the body to be returned to the family and for there to be an appropriate burial. And the way this usually works is that the university or the research entity will offer to do a cremation and return the ashes to the family, which then should be buried in the family plot. Very important not to keep ashes at home, not to keep them on the mantle above the fireplace or up in the attic. Always human ashes should be interred in the family plot, in the ground. So as long as those provisions are met, then it's allowable to donate one's body to science. I would add one other detail here, which I think is sometimes important, that if you're thinking about doing this, you should probably get the agreement of other people around you. If you're married, your spouse should agree to this, and, you know, maybe your children as well, because sometimes these bodies, when you donate them, you know, they may be used, for example, for ballistics studies, to study the effects of bullets on human tissues, perhaps to make better protection for policemen who are in the line of fire, or for soldiers, etc. So it's important to understand that, you know, the body is going to sometimes be significantly damaged, if not destroyed, and the rest of the family should be, you know, comfortable and willing to agree to that. In my opinion, it's better not to do that if somebody in the family says, oh, I don't like that. Then I think, you know, we should probably say, all right, I won't do it.
Caleb, thank you very, very much for the question. I hope it was helpful. Father Tad Poholchik is our guest from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. If you have questions about bioethics, if you have questions about the proper care of human beings from conception to natural death, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Up next, Jesse. Jesse, your question for Father Tad.
Yes, hello.
Hi, Jesse.
Thank you for taking my call. Hi.
Go ahead.
All right. I have a 95-year-old grandmother who I am the power of attorney for, and I have my mother and several of my aunts and uncles are all in their late 60s who are caring for her right now, and she's bedridden and pretty much incommunicative. And we had her go to the hospital about a week ago for a bed sore, and it started me thinking, because I am her power of attorney, how could I explain this to the family that her wishes were that there's no extreme measures to keep her alive? I've talked to them, and my mother especially, they're not letting her go. They keep caring for her and doing all they can, but it's also taking a toll on them, and I'm seeing all of this, and I'm actually getting worried that I'm going to have to be the one that's going to say, you know, she did not want to go on like this, and they're all going to kind of come at me. So I'm kind of wondering how I could explain it to a Catholic theology.
Yeah, Jesse, I think these situations can be challenging in terms of family dynamics, because sometimes there will be differences of opinion regarding what's the best way to proceed. And you haven't really provided, you know, any of the specifics around her case. And so your question is a general one. And, you know, it is correct to say that we do not have a duty to use extraordinary or heroic or disproportionate means to keep ourselves going. But it's also true that we have to use ordinary or proportionate means. And the problem here is that it's not always immediately clear what we mean when we say, is this ordinary or is it extraordinary? It's not easy to figure that out. So to give you an example, some people are on dialysis machines, and that does the work of their kidneys, clears their blood, and those machines, they have to go and hook themselves up 3 times a week, perhaps, and there's certainly some burden and discomfort associated with that. But for some people, I think we can safely say that going and getting dialysis is ordinary. It's not heroic. It's something they should do, and they see a lot of benefit from it, and it really helps their lives to go forward in a positive way. But there will be other cases where maybe it's not just the kidneys, but this person also has congestive heart failure, and maybe they just had a pretty big stroke. And now the question of whether that dialysis that they were doing previously is still ordinary, it will change in light of the new medical conditions that they are struggling with. So for, you know, your 95-year-old grandmother, it's not possible to really get into all the details of, you know, what things you and the family are debating and discussing, but it is fair to make the conclusion that there will be some things that may be heroic, and if they are extraordinary means, if they are something that have little benefit to her and do impose a lot of burden onto her, then they become optional, and you don't have to continue them. And it would not be a sin to discontinue those extraordinary interventions. So, you know, the question is more around the judgment. And I would say, if you're, you know, interested in following up on some specific, you know, detail of your grandmother's treatment protocols, feel free to check into our consultation service at our website, the National Catholic Bioethics Center. Our website is NCBCenter. That's for National Catholic Bioethics Center, so ncbcenter.org, and the drop-down menu is consultations, and one of our ethicists would be happy to go through more of the details with you.
Jesse, thanks very much. Father Tad Poholchik, our guest. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more conversation about Catholic bioethics with Father Tad right after this.
Every question is important. Ask yours today on Catholic Answers Live.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio. The church has 2,000 years of wisdom to share on what it takes to live life gracefully.
We're so overwhelmed by how much our faith has transformed our marriage and family especially. We want everyone to experience the incredible gift that the Catholic vision of life and love really is.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak. Tomorrow morning, 10 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back. Father Tad Paholczyk, our guest. Lots and lots of questions to get through, so excuse us if we're moving a little bit quickly here as we head towards the top of the hour. 888-318-7884, and we're talking about bioethics. We're taking your questions on bioethics. Father Tad, of course, from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. There was a question about from a caller who wanted to get some information from the National Catholic Bioethics Center, Father, but wasn't adept at using a computer. Is there any other way to reach you?
Yes, actually, our consultation service can be accessed just by telephone if you call our center at 215-877-2660. During normal business hours, you will be connected to a voicemail, and you just leave a message describing your question, and one of our ethicists will call you back. So once again, that number is 215-877-2660.
Thank you very much, Father. Scott from Dallas wasn't able to stay on the line, but asked if you could have give an explanation of the Catholic position on IVF, in vitro fertilization.
Oh, definitely. I think this is a great question. We have a lot of Catholics who, when they get married, discover a situation of infertility where they don't seem to be able to get pregnant. And the IVF industry, I think, is very alluring, very tempting. And it's important to understand that the Catholic Church teaches in no uncertain terms that it's never appropriate to bring new life into the world through means of the IVF industry, that this is a way of creating new life outside of the proper setting and context. Really, each of us deserves to be brought into the world in the marital embrace of husband and wife, in that one flesh union between them, and not to be brought into the world under the bright lights of the laboratory in glassware, where we then, as little embryos, can be manhandled and manipulated, used for our spare parts, frozen and sometimes abandoned in the deep freeze, etc., that all of that is below human dignity and should not be part at all of the way that we are brought into the world. We should be loved into being in that body-to-body self-giving of husband and wife, and in no other setting. So I think that's important for people to reflect on, you know, how beautiful that origin of ours is meant to be, that assures that we come into the world the same way that our own mom and dad did and that their mom and dad did, that we come into the world not unequal, but we come in equal to each other. There's an equality in origins that is protected.
I actually am often surprised at how surprised some Catholics are to find out that that's what the Church teaches about IVF. Sometimes it will come in the form of a complaint of, well, how can you be pro-life and against making babies?
Yeah, you know, you're right. I think many Catholics raise that question. And I often remind people that IVF, or in vitro fertilization, is not actually a pro-life type of technology. It's actually a two-edged sword, and it has a death-dealing edge of the sword. For example, when you make those embryos and some of them are discarded or poured down the sink. They also do many times genetic testing of the embryos. And if they don't like the genes that that embryo has, they freeze him and trap him basically forever. They also have a situation sometimes where they implant several embryos, let's say two or three, and maybe they all take and you get triplets. And then they recommend selective reductions, which is a fancy term for a direct abortion, where they destroy two of the three growing children in utero so that the last one that's left over can grow bigger and faster. All these things remind us that IVF is not actually pro-life. It is a technology that has opened up massive human rights abuses against very young and very vulnerable human beings.
And by the way, there are materials at Catholic.com for you to read if you have questions about IVF or in vitro fertilization. We hope you will avail yourself of that. Christina in Fort Wayne, Indiana, listening on Redeemer Radio, is up next. Christina, your question for Father Tad Poholchik.
Yes, thank you, Father, for taking my question. My question is, if you are a single female living a chaste lifestyle and your medical doctor recommends taking birth control for not birth control reasons, but for other medical reasons, is it okay to take?
Okay, so you're wondering if you're taking birth control for another purpose, is that allowable, basically, right?
Yes, it's not for birth control reasons. Like, it's like either for a skin condition. Lots of times they'll recommend it to regulate your period, but it's not for birth. The reason's not for birth control. And again, I'm talking about a single female living a chaste lifestyle. They're not active.
Yes. So as long as there is not another alternative that would work equally well, and that's something where I think it's important that the young woman or her family carry out due diligence and make sure that there isn't another pharmaceutical, another approach that could be used that would not limit her fertility. Even though she's not sexually active, it's always important to get as specific a drug as you can. And sometimes in situations, you know, where there's, for example, heavy menstrual bleeding or situations like that, it's true that the hormonal regimen in the birth control pill may be able to help with that bleeding, but there are also sometimes other substances that OBGYN doctors can recommend that will not impede fertility. And so it's good to try those and be sure that those other options have been ruled out first. But in that case, then yes, there will not be a problem. You're not taking it for birth control. You're not even taking it as birth control. What you're doing is you're taking the hormonal components that happen to be present within that pill for a specific therapeutic reason. And that is allowable for an individual to do that. And especially, you know, in the circumstances where you're mentioning it, that somebody is not sexually active. And I think, you know, there, of course, again, we have to, you know, be honest and make sure that that is not something that is, being used as an excuse either. Sometimes we have parents who are saying to themselves, I want to put my daughter onto this for acne or for whatever the condition may be. And then, you know, there's going to be this wonderful side benefit that if she happens to become sexually active, then she won't get pregnant. And that, of course, raises a whole host of concerns if that's our mindset going into it. Which, you know, obviously in your question, it clearly is not.
Okay, Christina.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Let's go now to Eliza in Sebastian, Florida. Eliza, your question for Father Tad Poholchik.
Yes, it's Elisa, and that's okay. Father, I want to clarify something that you said to a caller who was calling about donating their body to science. And after if they're cremated afterwards by the university, that they need to be buried in the ground. And my question is, I'm Catholic. My husband passed away 2 years ago. Neither of us are going to be cremated. He did not want to be. But he didn't want to be buried in the ground. He is in a cemetery in an above-ground crypt, and I would be placed there also next to him, well, actually head-to-head, when I pass away. Is that okay? Because I've already made arrangements for that.
Yes. Okay, Lisa, that's fine. You know, what I meant by saying being buried in the ground is simply that you are in an appropriate place where there is the burial of the dead. And of course, that will include a crypt, that will include mausoleums, that will include other, you know, proper arrangements for bodies or other remains of human beings. The main concern here is that you don't want ashes, for example, being sprinkled over the ocean, or ashes being taken up in an airplane and released into the sky, or being left above the fireplace, you know, at home, etc. And I'm afraid that there are, in this day and age, many abuses like that that are happening, and that really represents a failure to respect the remains of the dead. I mean, what you and your husband are doing is perfectly fine. It's wonderful. The main concern here from the church's point of view is, look, you need a place where people can come and be close to your mortal remains, and it's a sacred space, and they can pray for you and, you know, perhaps receive grace as well from, you know, the experience of that important element of our surrounding our death and dying. So that's really the key here, that we want to make sure that we're treating the remains of the dead with full respect and providing the appropriate resting place for them.
Okay, Lisa?
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you, Father. Thank you, Son.
Thank you. Elizabeth in Washington State, you are up next. Your question for Father Tad Boholczyk.
Hi.
Hi.
I was responding to the comment about organ donation. And not all the time it is okay. It is just not okay. I am a nurse. I work in a hospital, and I see I have been on a floor where there have been errors made, where a person was declared brain dead and the family discussing what organs they should give for this patient, and the patient literally sat up and started talking to them. They could have whisked that patient away and taken their organs.
Yeah, Elizabeth, you're describing a very legitimate concern, which is that there may be instances in the medical profession where doctors and nurses fail to do their jobs. They fail to carry out the appropriate testing, and the testing has been, you know, very clearly laid out by the American Academy of Neurology. It's very extensive testing. It involves reflex testing. It involves a number of other tests, including apnea testing to verify that a person can never take a breath. That part of their brain is also completely non-functional. And if all of that testing is properly done, which you're pointing out, unfortunately, once in a while, some corners are cut, that is terribly wrong. When doctors fail to do their jobs, it's a danger to all of us, and it's a danger to the whole field of organ transplantation, because we need to keep that whole field pristine and with the highest standards at all times, because otherwise people will say, oh, gee, they just want my organs, and they're going to come in and kill me to get them. And of course, that is unethical. And, you know, we've all read recently about what goes on in China, where the prisoners, there was a large report on this on the Fox News website just a few days ago, the prisoners are selected based on being a good match for people who come from outside of China and pay to get organs. And so, of course, that will be unethical. And even if those Chinese doctors are saying, oh, that prisoner is really dead, I mean, they killed them in order to get the organs, that kind of practice will be entirely unacceptable. But when the testing is done according to the protocols of the American Academy of Neurology, and doctors are faithful to all the required tests, you have what's called prudential certitude or moral certitude that this individual actually is dead, and it's okay to retrieve organs if they agreed to that ahead of time.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call. Thanks to everybody. Sorry to the callers we weren't able to get to. Father Tad Poholchik, thank you so much for a very enlightening hour on the Catholic teachings on bioethics.
Well, thank you so much, Cy. Great to be with you.
You can find Father Tad at the National Catholic Bioethics Center. 2 hours of open forum. Jimmy Akin tomorrow. See you there, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.